the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Good afternoon and happy Friday, everyone. I'm Bill Price. Bipartisan backlash.
And if this doesn't get your blood pressure up, I don't know what will.
That is our top story this Friday. Thousands of National Guard troops were banished to rest in a parking garage last night after protecting the nation's capital on Inauguration Day. Pete Hegseth, a former National Guard member, and served two tours in Iraq and Afghanistan.
This doesn't actually surprise me at all as someone who's been in the infantry for years. Hey, private, go sleep over there.
Right.
But what makes this so infuriating is that they were happy to have them as political pawns to use them for security and highlight them and laud them for days. And then once it's done, just out with the trash, into the parking ramp, sit out there.
5,000 troops were kicked out and placed in a Washington, D.C. parking garage overnight with temps in the lower 40s and just one bathroom. Fox News anchor Todd Pyro called it an embarrassment for the country.
This is yet another example of our nation, when troops come home from war, when troops finish a job, throwing them to the side. And it makes no sense. It is the exact counter to what you would think we would do when troops come home from war, from battle, from serving our nation. We should be embracing them. We should be thanking them in every way, shape possible for their service, for what they have done. And yet this is what we do. This is a black mark on our nation. We need to improve this.
That is Todd Pyro at Fox News. The National Guard troops now back at the Capitol, but lawmakers on both sides of the political aisle are demanding answers to why they were kicked out in the first place.
Illinois Senator Tammy Duckworth, an Army veteran who served in Iraq, tweeting, "I can't believe the same brave service members we've been asking to protect our Capitol and our Constitution these last 2 weeks would be unceremoniously ordered to vacate the building."
NBC's Casey Hunt. Texas Governor Greg Abbott says he's seen enough. He's calling his state's National Guard troops back home. So too is New Hampshire Governor Chris Sununu and Florida Governor Ron DeSantis.
They're soldiers. They're not Nancy Pelosi servants. And this comes on the back end of them trying to investigate the backgrounds of our guardsmen. I thought that was totally inappropriate. Mm-hmm. I thought it was very disrespectful for people who are clearly patriots. So this is a half-cock mission at this point, and I think the appropriate thing is to bring them home.
25,000 National Guard troops were sent to Washington, D.C. earlier this month to protect the Capitol in the days leading up to Wednesday's inauguration. Impeachment is moving forward. That is the other big story this Friday. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer says that one article of impeachment against former President Trump will arrive at the U.S. Senate next week.
I've spoken to Speaker Pelosi, who informed me that the articles will be delivered to the Senate on Monday.
Schumer says there will be a trial, and that trial expected to start sometime next month.
I've been speaking to the Republican leader about the timing and duration of the trial, but make no mistake, a trial will be held in the United States Senate, and there will be a vote on whether to convict the president.
President Trump is accused of inciting the deadly attack on the U.S. Capitol earlier this month. Deportation delay. President Biden has put a 100-day pause on removing illegal immigrants living in the U.S. This as a second migrant caravan now heading towards the southern border.
I've been doing this for 34 years. This is the worst public safety policy memorandum I've ever seen in my career. This is the most anti-enforcement policy I've ever read. This is so far left, I had to read it six times to say, is this really true?
Former acting ICE director Tom Homan says the caravan of migrants marching towards the U.S. border will be here soon. And putting up the welcome sign in the middle of a global pandemic, probably not a good idea.
So many people are going to come. Some are going to get by the Border Patrol, and we're in the middle of a pandemic. And if we can't detain them, they're going to be released in the middle of a pandemic. We are going to import more COVID cases because of the incompetence of this administration.
Homan says President Biden's rhetoric is driving that caravan towards our southern border. Well, that was quick. So much for unity. The honeymoon clearly over for President Biden after signing nearly two dozen executive orders since taking the oath of office on Wednesday. Much of what former President Trump set in motion now off the table. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell.
On the Biden administration's very first day, it took several big steps in the wrong direction. The president reentered the failed Paris climate agreement. The president also unilaterally canceled the Keystone XL pipeline.
President Biden signing even more executive orders today to undo the policies of his predecessor. Yesterday, the new president snapped at a reporter for asking him if setting the bar of 100 million vaccines was high enough. Here's how Biden responded.
When I announced it, you all said it's not possible. Come on, give me a break, man.
Give me a break, man. As for the new administration's cozy relationship with the mainstream media, Bill McGurn at the Wall Street Journal says that's about as shocking as the sun coming up today.
This has always been liberal, and there's nothing wrong with that. You can have a view and still write fairly and objectively. I think to expect people not to have views is unrealistic. However, just think of what we had with the President Trump.
McGurn says he has no problem with being liberal, just be fair. Adam Gullett is with the group Accuracy and Media.
I'm okay with someone being upfront with where they stand ideologically. I have no problem with that. But what we've seen with these news outlets is a combination of activist journalism, where rather than even trying to be a referee, they act more like cheerleaders.
According to Gullett's group, 57% of Democrats say they trust the news they're getting today. Just 18% of Republicans say they trust it. The cancel culture in full swing at our nation's colleges and universities.
Unfortunately, conservative ideas are more under attack today on campus than ever before.
Isabel Brown at Turning Point USA says the University of Wisconsin actually telling students that using correct gender-neutral pronouns matters more than using correct grammar.
Maybe instead of focusing so much on the exact pronoun that needs to be used for a certain student in particular, we should be preparing our students for better graduation rates, more prepared for the job market, and to succeed after life after graduation.
Colleges across the country now adopting gender-neutral language, with some schools even introducing it into the classroom. The new president took up the coronavirus on his first full day in office yesterday. Joe Biden says he inherited a problem even worse than what he thought.
For the past year, we couldn't rely on the federal government to act with the urgency and focus and coordination we needed. And we have seen the tragic cost of that failure. 3,000 to 4,000 deaths per day.
And with more than 4,300 deaths yesterday, President Biden says he's launching what he calls a wartime effort to combat COVID-19.
Mr. Biden has released a 200-page plan tackling everything from getting a majority of the country vaccinated by summer to reopening schools. He's planning to sign two new executive orders targeting economic relief.
Deborah Rodriguez reporting. One of the most prolific hitters in the history of baseball has passed away. Hank Aaron, dead at the age of 86.
That ball is a high drive in the deep left center field. Buckner goes back to the fence. It is gone.
Vin Scully with the call after hammering Hank hit his 715th home run to beat Babe Ruth's record. That was back on April 8th, 1974. Aaron would go on to hit 755 round trippers. He was inducted into the National Baseball Hall of Fame in 1982. Again, Hank Aaron, dead at the age of 86. Still to come this Friday, a community mourns in Mendon, a local coach in charge in Philly, and fans ramping up in Buffalo.
Hey there, good afternoon to all. We're tracking lake effect heading into the weekend, maybe a larger storm system early next week. Forecast details are coming up.
Thank you, Kevin Williams. Checking the stories making news where you live in New York and Pennsylvania, Friday, January 22nd. The identities of those three National Guard soldiers who were killed when their helicopter crashed Wednesday night in Mendon, New York, during a military training exercise have been released. Authorities say 54-year-old Stephen Skoda of Rochester, 39-year-old Christian Koch of Honeyoy Falls, and 30-year-old Daniel Pryle of Rochester were all killed in that crash. Monroe County Chief Deputy Michael Fowler is a former member of the National Guard.
It is one large family, especially when you talk about the National Guard and you're all from the same hometown community. and it's very tough.
Investigators believe the pilot of the doomed military helicopter intentionally flew it away from homes and crashed it into a farmer's field in Mendon to avoid killing more people. Tracy Walker lives near where the chopper went down.
It breaks my heart. I can't even imagine the effort it must have taken to get that helicopter to the field away from the houses. And that really gave me pause this morning. That could have come right down on our heads. We're ever so grateful that they were able to avoid that.
Police officers and firefighters stood guard over the crash site last night to honor the victims. Two people are presumed dead after a house caught fire overnight in Schuylkill County, Pennsylvania. Coroner now on the scene. One woman was rescued from that home, which went up in smoke near the town of Ashland. New York Congressman Tom Reed says an impeachment trial in the U.S. Senate will only divide a polarized country. Former President Donald Trump stands accused of inciting an insurrection for the Capitol riots earlier this month. The Corning Republican says the punishment doesn't fit the crime.
Impeachment, especially snap impeachment, with all the difficult issues that we're dealing with, and also the constitutionality of removing someone from office when they've already left. I think that's more driven out of maybe emotion, maybe out of anger, maybe out of vengeance. Vengeance is not a good place to move forward from.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi will deliver that one impeachment article to the U.S. Senate on Monday next week. The trial expected to start in mid-February in the U.S. Senate. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo says unvaccinated hospital workers could be cause for concern in the fight against COVID. Cuomo says just 65% of nurses and doctors have gotten the shot.
I would have liked to see the healthcare workers leading the charge, just as a sign of confidence to New Yorkers. If nurses and doctors take it, must be safe.
In Western New York, just 62% of healthcare workers have been vaccinated. UB infectious disease expert Dr. Tom Russo.
It's critical for us to keep repeating this message that this vaccine is highly effective and safe.
Russo says it's way past time for nurses and doctors to get vaccinated. The state facing a vaccine shortage, however, with many clinics now turning away appointments. The pandemic taking its toll on nurses in the Keystone State. Officials say nurses are burning out from working those long hours. Many are getting sick and some or even dying.
The nurses are suffering deep inside, but they're not showing it. I mean, we're doing our best what we can with what we have.
John Berezanski is a community health nurse with the State Department of Health. He says the burnout is real and there's no relief in sight.
And we don't need to see any more deaths due to this when it's easily fixed with more staff.
But the pandemic has caused a lot of hospitals to cut their budgets and their staff. Brittany Fellinzer, a registered nurse from Harrisburg, she says she hardly gets any time off.
Days that we had already been promised, we were then told that we were not allowed to take those days, which meant no time with our family.
Pennsylvania ranks 45th in the country when it comes to healthcare spending. The pandemic not only taking its toll on nurses, but teachers are also feeling the pressure.
I think if there's any point in our history where families and society will appreciate teachers, you know, now's that time.
Superintendent Dr. Sean Schweitzer says districts are struggling to keep teachers in front of the class. Officials say even before the pandemic hit, the nation was projected to lose over 300,000 teachers annually by the year 2025. Kudos to a local kid, Jamestown, New York native and former Colts offensive coordinator Nick Sirianni, now the new head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles. The 39-year-old graduate of Southwestern High School in Jamestown will take over the team next season. Win or lose, police are getting ready for the crowds at the airport in Buffalo Sunday night to welcome back their beloved Buffalo Bills.
We've been planning for this for a considerable time.
NFTA Transit Police Chief George Gast says he doesn't expect any trouble, but just in case, they'll be ready.
We're going to have a pretty robust law enforcement presence out there, and it's not that we're expecting trouble. Bills fans are normally pretty happy, and win or lose, they support the Bills, but we need that type of presence to provide for the safety of the fans and of the players and staff from the Bills.
The Bills play the Chiefs Sunday night in Kansas City with the winner going to Super Bowl 55 in Tampa. With more on that, here's Sonny, your two-minute drill.
Yeah, all eyes on Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City. He took the majority of snaps in practice yesterday as the Chiefs prepare for Sunday's AFC Championship game against the Buffalo Bills. The star quarterback has not been cleared of concussion protocol yet. Kansas City head coach Andy Reid.
Done well up to this point, so today was, you know, limited work and no contact.
In other news, the Philadelphia Eagles are making Nick Sirianni their next head coach. ESPN reports the Eagles will hire the Indianapolis Colts offensive coordinator to replace Doug Peterson. Sirianni spent the last three seasons with the Colts. The Pittsburgh Steelers are taking a chance on a former first-round draft pick, Dwayne Haskins, the quarterback siding with the Steelers, along with three others, to reserve future contracts. The 23-year-old Haskins was released by Washington after Week 16 loss to Carolina. He had just 12 touchdowns and 14 interceptions in 16 career games since Washington drafted him with the 15th pick in 2019 out of Ohio State. To the NBA, R.J. Barrett scored 28. The Knicks shocked the Warriors 119-104 in San Fran.
It's tough to win on the road, and I just think we've been coming in focused, getting mentally prepared. So, it's been good, and hope to continue that throughout the rest of the road.
LeBron James had 34 points. The Lakers beat Giannis and the Bucks 113-106. On the ice, the Flyers fall in a shootout to the Bruins 5-4. Islanders big over New Jersey 4-1. College basketball, Penn State holds off Ron Harper Jr. and Rutgers 75-67. University of Buffalo with a big win against Eastern Michigan 92-77. In women's action, number 23 Syracuse falls to number 1 Louisville 67-54. Pitt loses to Miami 72-68, and Naz Hillman scored 50 points for Michigan, but the Wolverines suffered their first loss in the season, 81-77 to Ohio State. For Family Life, I'm Sonny Dovia.
Thank you, Sonny. Still to come on this Friday edition of the Noon Report, the boys are back. Capital Connection on the way, plus Bedlam in Buffalo. The Bills one win away from the Super Bowl.
For millions these days, including myself, C.S. Lewis's words on suffering ring loud and true. That pain is God's megaphone to rouse a deaf world. Sitting in for John Stone Street, I'm Shane Morris. This is Breakpoint. Recently, I've had occasion to ponder suffering in a deeper way than ever before. I say this not because the situation I'm in is worse than it's ever been, but because I've become more familiar with the true character of suffering. It's not about circumstances. Not really. As pro-life author Stephanie Gray Connors explained in our recent conversation on the Upstream podcast, suffering is the gulf between what we desperately want and what we actually have, between, for instance, the healing for which we pour out our hearts in prayer night after night, and the apparent silence that answers from heaven. No, I've realized that suffering isn't about circumstances. It's about the fear that your circumstances are meaningless, that God has abandoned you. I've always thought that anyone could suffer indefinitely if they clearly understood and believed in the purpose they were accomplishing. But what if there is no purpose? What if you've learned every conceivable lesson and undergone every imaginable sanctification, and the drumbeat of sorrow continues with no end in sight? What do you do when the spiritual shepherds who assured you God was preparing a weight of glory through your momentary affliction stammer and look away, no longer able to meet your questions? Well, according to Connors, you stop asking why and start asking what. That is, what good can I bring out of this situation? 2 months ago, I might have dismissed this reframing as trite and Pollyannish, as a clunky way of chirping, look for the silver lining. But now I'm not so sure. We Christians may have done a great disservice to each other by reframing the New Testament's words about suffering as behavior modification. After all, if God is trying to sanctify us in the sense of weaning us off of sin and self, then suffering ought to be more evenly distributed. I don't presume to know how much dross is left in anyone else's soul, but surely it's time for God to go work the bellows on someone else. Again and again, I asked these questions. Why? But I never asked what, as in, what if this is the kingdom work he called me to do? Well, the reason Christ's suffering is the ultimate answer to both sin and sorrow isn't simply that his death absolves us of guilt, although it certainly does that. Jesus triumphed in his agony by introducing into our fallen world something it couldn't possibly swallow, the infinite creative power of redemptive suffering, to lay down your life for a loved one, to keep on turning pages when the story seems to be over, to clutch your faith on that fourth 2 a.m. drive to the hospital, to look up from your wheelchair and sing like Johnny Erickson Tata. These responses to suffering shake our sin-racked world and silence the demands for intellectual answers. And they do this by following the pattern God established when he gave us his son, instead of a clever theodicy. Our Father is not preparing us for some future battle. We're in the thick of it right now, and our faithfulness and love for one another in the fray are, you know, kind of the point. But this raises a fearful possibility, one that C.S. Lewis explored in his essay on the efficacy of prayer. What if our kinship with Christ runs as deep as the ancient martyrs believed? What if the strongest Christians should expect the heaviest crosses? What if we're not just likely, but certain to find ourselves crying along with Jesus, my God, why have you forsaken me? Well, as Lewis concluded, there's a mystery here which, even if I had the power, I might not have the courage to explore. Perhaps the path to meaning inevitably runs through suffering, and always has. In that case, it's comforting to know someone has already blazed the trail. For John Stone Street and Breakpoint, I'm Shane Morris.
The weekend is here, so too is meteorologist Kevin Williams.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. The fluffy lake flakes will be flying southeast of the lakes heading into the weekend. Outside of lake belts, it's mainly just flurries, a little bit of mixed sun. Then we switch modes from local lake effect to a larger storm risk early next week, although the details of its tracking and timing are not yet clear. For this afternoon, variable cloudiness, sunny breaks, flurries in areas of lake snow. Couple 3-4 fluffy inches in favored areas east and southeast of Lake Erie and Ontario. Temperatures have peaked for the day, will hold steady or drop as the afternoon wears on. It's cold tonight and tomorrow, flurries for some, lake effect snow for a few, with several inches accumulating, again in favored areas southeast of Lake Erie and Ontario. Otherwise, variable amounts of cloudiness, low to 19, high tomorrow 20. Sunday, a morning flurry or two near Lake Ontario. Otherwise, partly sunny and cold, the high in the low to mid-20s.
Okay, Kevin Williams, you're plugged into the Noon Report on Family Life.
And welcome back to another edition of Capital Connection. Fridays during the Noon Report, we give you direct connection, what's happening in Albany and Harrisburg with the experts on the issues at the state capitals. They are Jason McGuire of New Yorkers for Constitutional Freedoms and Michael Geer at the Pennsylvania Family Institute. Well, America got a new president this week, guys. I don't know if you caught that. It made the news. We will start with you, Michael, on this one. What will be the most immediate impact of the Biden administration on the work that you do advancing faith, family, life issues, religious freedom in Pennsylvania?
Well, with the inauguration of Joe Biden in Washington, D.C. this week and executive orders that were assigned on his first day in office, the challenges are going to be significant on the sanctity of life. That's a key one right off the bat in terms of his move towards taxpayer funding of abortion, repealing the Hyde Amendment. Those are real challenges that impact the sanctity of life, the key issue that we fight here at the Pennsylvania Family Institute, but also on issues of religious liberty, LGBT issues. This is a radical administration coming in. I tend to be a hopeful person, hope, you know, in Jesus Christ, obviously, and then hope that a new administration won't be as bad in this case as we predict. But we're going to need to work to protect the future of religious liberty and sanctity of life here in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, the most executive orders that any incoming president ever signed on day one was one, Jason, before yesterday. Joe Biden signed, I think, 17. I'll ask you the same question. What is going to be the most immediate impact that you're going to feel when it comes to the work you do advancing faith, family, pro-life issues, religious freedom in New York?
Well, I can tell you that President Joe Biden has already issued an executive order that prevents and he says combats discrimination on the basis of gender identity or sexual orientation. And the ramifications for that are Christian colleges, schools, you know, anybody that's really holds to a biblical orthodoxy concerning human sexuality will have to allow transgender sports competitions. And it really redefines sex at the federal level again, similar to what President Obama did back under his administration. Then President Trump, pulled it back, and now we're back on again. And that was day one. So that's day one. I can only imagine what the rest of this term is going to look like.
Yeah, when you talk about LGBT issues, Michael, we saw how prominent that will play in the Biden administration with the job offer that they just gave to the former Pennsylvania Health Secretary, Dr. Rachel Levine.
Well, the appointment of Dr. Levine to the federal administration is just an example of identity politics. I mean, this is a transgender individual, formerly Dr. Richard Levine, who has a very sketchy track record here in Pennsylvania as the health secretary during the COVID crisis, whether it's taking the secretary's mother out of a nursing home situation while putting COVID-positive patients in nursing homes, or dealing with the opioid crisis or other issues in Pennsylvania. The track record is not one that you would think this person would get an advancement, and yet this is identity politics, is what I would say.
Yeah, indeed. Governor Cuomo this week, Jason, unveiled his state budget. It is a behemoth. Actually, not one, but two state budgets when it gets down to it. They're competing contingency plans, one in case Uncle Sam doesn't come through on a massive $15 billion bailout. Do you think that bailout is coming?
I think that there is some form of a bailout coming from the federal government. I think having Senator Chuck Schumer as the Senate Majority Leader will bring the bacon home for New York in many ways, and I think we will see some of that bailout. Whether or not it's $15 billion, though, is a different matter. And frankly, I don't think it's the responsibility of the federal government to bail out Governor Cuomo's bad fiscal policies here. That's ultimately what this is. Remember, it's not all COVID. It is really just some exorbitant actions that New York has taken that it just cannot get its fiscal house in order.
Yeah, Pennsylvania, let's talk about an issue that we're going to have to maybe many times this year, and that's redistricting, Michael. I know you've got your eyes on it. Lawmakers are gearing up for this once-a-decade brawl where they redraw the political maps, a process known as gerrymandering. The state set to lose at least one congressional seat. How does it work, and by and large, is it a fair process in the Commonwealth?
Well, it's a process that's described and mandated by the state constitution. It's a process that involves the legislature. It also involves the governor, and then has historically in recent years involved the Pennsylvania Supreme Court weighing in, both in 2011 when district lines were redrawn, then they weighed in 2013. The court weighed in again in 2018, redrawing those districts. So the fact that we have divided government, we have a Republican House and Senate in Pennsylvania, but a Democrat governor in Tom Wolf, means it's going to be a very contentious issue, and it wouldn't surprise me if the courts weigh in on this once again.
Yeah, and in New York State, it's going to be a major issue. Democrats have that super majority status. Explain how redistricting will work, because New York's going to lose probably two seats in the next election. How does it work in New York, Jason?
Well, that's going to be an issue here as well, similar to what, Michael has described in Pennsylvania. The challenge for us, though, is right now everything is under Democrat control. And so the gerrymandering process is all under one-party control. That's going to make it very challenging for any Republican candidate moving forward in the state of New York.
Yeah, and they may be doing this while there's a race. It's hard to believe that district in the 22nd district, that still is not been called. What's going on there, Jason?
Well, portions of that race that, again, as you said, has not been called, is going to be going to a recount, essentially. And so we're going to be months into this new term, and we're not going to have representation for the folks in New York 22, kind of central New York region there. So it's just abysmal, though. It should not be handled this way. And I just think that the policies of how the election reforms have been enacted in New York are going to lead to more and more of these types of problems.
Yeah, unbelievable that race is still outstanding. The only one in the country right now. So big march next weekend. Michael, it's the annual March for Life. The nation's capital has gotten a lot of attention this month, but this march this year is a little different. Explain.
It is different, and just announced earlier this week, the March for Life organizers in Washington, D.C. This is the longest-lasting human rights march in world
history going on since 1974 is going to be only virtual this year because of issues related to COVID as well as security. They've decided to do virtual. That doesn't mean that people can't participate in marches. There is a March for Life taking place in Philadelphia this Saturday, tomorrow in Philadelphia. So that's something that people can participate in. And around the country, Live Action is promoting rallies for life. So there are still opportunities to participate in marches or observances with about the sanctity of life in your community.
And a shameless plug here, Michael, you've got information on your website about the Dr. Kermit Gosnell tragedy. Hard to believe 10 years since that happened, but there's a remarkable video out there. We strongly encourage you to watch that. But there's information on your website about that. We'll give that at the end. But let's talk COVID before we go, Jason. Words like confusion, frustration, anger. The governor of New York says, hey, we may be out of vaccine here soon. Just unmitigated disaster is another way of explaining the rollout of the vaccine in New York. I'm sure there's a lot of finger pointing and responsibility going around, but who is ultimately to blame for this?
Well, Governor Cuomo has time and again said the buck stops with him until it actually has to. And that's when the finger pointing begins. And so I think in this situation, we do have to look at the Cuomo administration. They are being given vaccines from the federal government. They have not been able to fulfill that order in a timely fashion. And they are being reduced from 300,000 to 250,000 each week. But those vaccines are still coming in. The problems fall at Andrew Cuomo's feet.
All right. And that will have to be the last word this week. But if you want to watch that video, Dr. Kermit Gosnell, 10 years later, where can they get that, Michael?
PAFamily.org.
And stay informed on all the issues in Albany as well. Jason, what's your website, sir?
AlbanyUpdate.com.
Show as always, Capital Connection comes your way every Friday during the noon report.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. The fluffy lake flakes will be flying southeast of the lakes heading into the weekend. Outside of lake belts, it's mainly just flurries, a little bit of mixed sun. Then we switch modes from local lake effect to a larger storm risk early next week, although the details of its tracking and timing are not yet clear. For this afternoon, variable cloudiness, sunny breaks, flurries in areas of lake snow, couple 3-4 fluffy inches in favored areas east and southeast of Lake Erie and Ontario. Temperatures have peaked for the day, will hold steady or drop as the afternoon wears on. It's cold tonight and tomorrow, flurries for some, lake effect snow for a few, with several inches accumulating, again in favored areas southeast of Lake Erie and Ontario. Otherwise, variable amounts of cloudiness, low to 19, high tomorrow 20. Sunday, a morning flurry or two near Lake Ontario. Otherwise, partly sunny and cold, the high in the low to mid-20s.
Okay, Kevin Williams, have yourself a great weekend. Finally, this Friday, well, we haven't had a lot to cheer about over the past year or so, but they're cheering this weekend in Buffalo. Here's Family Life's Dee Haley.
Excitement is in the air as the Buffalo Bills get ready for their first AFC championship game since 1994. The Bills will take on the defending Super Bowl champion Kansas City Chiefs at Arrowhead Stadium Sunday evening. Meanwhile, Buffalo Bills general manager Brandon Bean has been named the Sporting News Executive of the Year, and six Bills have earned All-Pro and Pro Bowl honors this season, including Bean's first draft pick as the Bills GM, Josh Allen. Kickoff is set for 6:40 p.m. on Sunday, and the game will air on CBS. Dee Haley, Family Life News.
We'll be watching. Thank you, Dee. That's the world we live in this Friday. Thanks for coming along. Have a great weekend. I'm Bill Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.